This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. There are things about business and economics that are just odd, don't make much sense on the face of them. That is why we do a segment where you ask questions and we answer. It's called I Have Always Wondered.
If you wonder...
By asking 1,000 questions to get one answer, by brain work and blade work.
Listener Karen Johannes of Westminster, Colorado, sent us this email. I'm very short, she wrote, 4'9", and I have a terrible time finding clothes, as do many of my friends and relatives. So she wanted to know how clothing makers figure out what size of clothes to make. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is on that one from our bureau at Oregon Public Broadcasting.
How many times have you gone into a store, Gap, Nordstrom, Target, and taken a whole bunch of clothes in your size to the fitting room and then left without buying a thing because nothing even close to fit you? Turns out this is pretty common, says Amanda Chernofsky, who studies the fashion industry at Temple University.
Clothing sizes make no sense, and they never have.
Chernofsky, a sociologist, recently went deep into fashion, working as a plus-sized model, and wrote a book about it. She says, to understand how we arrived at size chaos, we have to understand where the industry came from. Until the early 1900s, most people made their own clothes, or if they were rich enough, had a tailor or dressmaker do it for them. By mid-century, most people were buying ready-to-wear clothing produced in modern textile mills, like this one in Passaic, New Jersey, featured in an industrial film of the 1940s.
For over 50 years, Botany products have answered the demand for quality and style within the reach of the average American pocketbook.
It's the era of mass-produced clothing for the growing middle class, sold at department stores and from the Sears catalog. And World War II has a big impact, says Chernofsky.
The government was interested in standardizing sizing to conserve fabric, you know, the booming catalog industry. It was costing them about $10 million a year not to have set sizes.
Because people returned missized, ill-fitting clothing by the trainload. So the USDA, which then had a Bureau of Home Economics, hired statisticians
to collect data on 15,000 women and measure them in 59 different places.
And in 1958, issued the first standardized women's size guidelines. By the 1980s, though, brands had abandoned the standards and developed their own. As a result, different brands of clothing that are marked with the same size can vary by as much as 3 to 4 inches. And Chernofsky says major apparel brands actually like having their own proprietary sizing.
And part of the reason is that it forges brand loyalty. If you find a pair of pants that fits you well, you're going to continue buying from that same brand.
Another reason they want to have their own unique sizes, consumer psychology. Tasha Lewis, who teaches apparel design at Cornell University, says brands adjust their sizes to make female customers feel thinner. It even has a name in the industry.
Vanity sizing is very real. I worked at one company to make their customer that wore 2 feel like she wore 0. They shifted all of the measurements down.
And Lewis says many brands just won't make clothes to fit bigger women in the plus size range. They want to be associated with a skinnier image.
So if you're not that size, maybe a celebrity on the red carpet, they don't have a sample for you to wear.
And what's the future hold? New apparel startups are now using 3D scanners and smartphone apps to take precise body measurements, send the data to a small batch textile factory, and custom produce a garment sized and fitted for you, which can be pricey and is only available from a few stores and websites so far. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.